Welcome to Heart of the Cloud by Cloudonaut. We are your hosts, Andreas and
Michael Wittig.
Yes, that's right. So, Andreas, what was your crazy, or what was the craziest reInvent story that you encountered while being there?
So, I remember one thing, Michael. So, I don't know, it was a few years ago. So, I think it was when we did the second edition of AWS in Action, or the second edition of the book. We, Manning, our publisher, sent us, 50 or 40 books to Las Vegas, and we carried them around and gave them as presents to the people we met at the conference. But at the end, we had a few books left. I think we had, 10 or 20 books left, and we just, because we couldn't carry so much, and we decided, let's ship them home to Germany. And as we are not able to take them on the plane, we decided to use the UPS to send them home. And we got there, there's a counter in the, I think in the Venetian Hotel or somewhere. And we got there and asked if they could ship that to Germany. And of course they said, yes, we can do so. And I didn't really follow the conversation with the one at the counter. And I just swiped my credit card through it. And later I realized that I think we paid $200 or something for shipping those books home, because it turns out that shipping heavy goods across the Atlantic is quite expensive. So I think that's maybe my craziest story. What is yours, Michael?
I can also remember that story, yeah. And I think it was also kind of crazy to carry all those books from the... I think we also had to pick them up at... I think it was the FedEx counter,
ah,
right?
FedEx,
and then
we
picked them up there, and we moved them to the hotel room and signed them, and then it was very heavy, and that was really a crazy story. So I will never do this again.
No, we should do e-books and not carry around real books. That's definitely a good idea.
Yeah, in general, it's always fun to be in Las Vegas, but we are not there this time, and also we haven't been there last year, so we might be back in the next year.
Yeah,
let's see. So
that would be great. I'm missing it a little bit, actually. Here's a message from our partners. Are you looking for a new job? AWS expertise is in high demand. Our partner TechRacer is hiring cloud consultants focusing on ML and analytics. You should apply when enjoying extracting insights out of huge amounts of data with services like Athena, EMR, Redshift, or SageMaker. Join TechRacer in Hanover, Duisburg, Frankfurt, Hamburg, Munich, Vienna, Lisbon, and Lucerne. And also our partner Demicon is looking for a senior lead cloud solution architect, AWS, working remotely from Germany or the EU. Are you into infrastructure as code with Terraform and containers with EKS or ECS? Then this is for you. Demicon is one of the largest technical consulting teams and leading Atlassian full service providers in the DACH region. Become part of a new team at Demicon with a focus on cloud technologies. You will find links to both job descriptions in the show notes. So apply today. So Michael, so as we said, today are a lot of announcements, and in this show we go through those that we found the most interesting and most exciting. There's more, but I think this is a good summary of the important stuff already. So Michael, what caught your attention when going through your feed reader?
Yeah, the first one is about introducing payload-based message filtering for Amazon SNS. So before that, you could filter in an SNS subscription, you could filter based on message attributes. And a message attribute is something that the publisher of the message needs to specify additionally. So there's the message payload, which usually is JSON or XML, and then there are attributes. And an attribute can have different types, so we usually use string, but I think it could be also numbers and stuff like this. And with this new announcement, what you can now do is you can also create a subscription and filter based on properties in the payload. This only works for JSON payload, so keep that in mind. All right, so that's it. That's the announcement. So I looked into the pricing here, and it is not free. You have to pay for the message filtering, and you pay $0.13 per gigabyte of scanned data with a minimum of 1 kilobyte per message. So This is a little bit different than attribute filters. They are free of charge. And also, if you compare SNS to EventBridge, which is very similar in many terms, in EventBridge, it's also for free to filter based on the message payload. So keep that in mind. And if my math is correct, then SNS will be more expensive for messages that are larger than 6 kilobytes. And also, if you have like more than one subscriber, then of course this number goes even goes down. So I'm not really sure why it is so expensive, to be honest. And the syntax for creating those filters looks a little bit familiar for if you compare it to EventBridge, but also a little bit different. So I'm not quite sure if it's exactly the same thing or not. I don't know if they reinvented something or if they just customized it a little bit. That's it, Andreas. That's the first very tiny news item that I have picked. So what have you picked?
Yeah, so I looked into an announcement that says Amazon CloudWatch launches cross-account observability and across multiple AWS accounts. So that is what I looked into. And so this seems to be interesting. It supports metrics, logs, and even traces from X-Ray. And the way it works is basically you can say to any account, you are now a monitoring account. And the monitoring account is basically the data sync. So this can receive metric data, log data, and traces from other AWS accounts. And then you can link source accounts to this monitoring account. And you can do that either by inviting accounts individually, so basically establishing that link one by one. You can also use organizations to do so. And so it seems to work similar to a resource-based policy, actually. That's what I think is behind that. And so that's it. And the way you set it up, so I tried to set it up with connecting basically only two accounts with each other, so one as the monitoring account, the other as the source account. And there's a really good user experience for that. So there's really, you just click a link and then you jump to the other account and it pre-fills the form for you, and you just click the submit button and then things are starting working. It takes a little while until the metrics and the log groups and so show up in the monitoring account. But then it looks like, so I used the management console to browse through the metrics and log groups and so on. And then it actually feels like those log groups and metrics belong to the monitoring account. There's an indicator that says, so this log group, this metric belongs to this other account. So you see that in the CloudWatch console right away. So that's really cool. It doesn't seem like AWS is copying the data to the other account. It actually seems this is more or less just granting access to those resources. So the Amazon resource name does not change. It still has the original account ID in it. And also we are not paying for it. So the feature, sharing log groups and metrics is free of charge. So this is probably also a good sign that AWS is not copying the data, because otherwise we would pay for that. Only for traces. So if you use X-ray traces, here AWS says the first copy of the trace is free of charge and you pay for more copies of that data. So that is probably because they're copying some data around. I don't know. So what I tried as well is I tried to create a CloudWatch alarm based on a metric that I shared. This works as well. So this seemed to be a really cool thing. So the question is, why do you need to share your CloudWatch metrics and logs and traces across accounts? So I think probably the most important reason is if you have a team that does, for example, 24/7 operations and needs to get an overview over all applications in the organization, then this can help. And maybe also for something like a management overview of what is going on, that might be helpful as well. To get a quick overview of all your applications. So if you really have a lot of accounts and a lot of applications, I think then this gets interesting. Yeah. So that's the cross-account observability with CloudWatch. And by the way, I missed one thing. There was a similar feature before. There was a cross-account, cross-region feature before, and it basically is giving you a dashboard over, I think it's only metrics and dashboards. And this used IAM roles, and you needed to roll them out. So now this is now called legacy. And this new feature is the new way to do so, but it only supports aggregating data across accounts in the same region. So there is no way to build an overview over multiple regions with that feature. Yeah. So that's it, Michael.
All right, I see. So the one that I looked through next is titled "Announcing Elastic Throughput for Amazon Elastic File System." So Elastic Throughput is basically a new way to configure your file system. Before that, we have, I think it was called Burst Throughput, and we also had Provisioned Throughput, and now we have Elastic Throughput. So basically what it means, Elastic Throughput adapts to your access pattern. And the limit for reading is 3 gigabytes per second, and for writing is 1 gigabyte per second. Per file system. So if you connect 10 clients, they share those 1 gigabyte write limit, for example. Those are the same limits that apply to provision throughput. So you can also not provision more than that on your file system. One thing that I notice is that the bursting throughput can be higher than that, depending on the region. So in the big region, so US East 1 or, for example, Ireland, there are higher limits for bursting performance. So not sure what that really is about. And the way that the pricing works here is that you pay an additional fee for reads and writes per gigabyte. So for example, for reads, you pay 3 gigabytes. You pay 3 cents per gigabyte, and for writes, $6 per gigabyte. So that's kind of the fee. So there is no provision, so there's no kind of fee that you pay all the time. It is only if you really need it. And I think it is kind of the new way or the new default that you should use unless you have more specific requirements, I would say. So I think that's very interesting. And I think for most EFS file system, that should be the kind of default. It is, and that's very cool, available in all regions today, except for the China regions. So you can just use it. I haven't checked if it's actually supported in CloudFormation, but we have to do this after the show. So Andreas, I think you also have an EFS announcement, yeah, right?
So the announcement I stumbled upon is AWS announces lower latencies for the Amazon Elastic File System EFS. So I didn't run any benchmarks or performance tests, but AWS promises that EFS now delivers up to 60% lower read operation latencies when working with frequently accessed data. And EFS now delivers up to 40% lower write operation latency when working with small files. So I think it's important. So they say it delivers up to 60%. So realistically, it's probably something with, I don't know, between 30 and 60%. And also the interesting thing here is they say they lower the read operation latencies when working with frequently accessed data. So this is not for all the data in your file system, but only the files that are getting accessed frequently. So it seems to be like some kind of caching that they built in here. And the lower write latency, I think this is interesting, especially as it says when you work with files smaller than 64 kilobytes. So I think that is interesting. So I remember there was a similar announcement than that about lowering the latencies for EFS. And I looked it up, and actually they announced in February that now the read latency is 600 microseconds on average. So they already reduced the latency of EFS file systems, I would say significantly, in February. And now, about 10 months later, we have another announcement that they are reducing latencies even further. So it seems to be like they are really working on that and tweaking the performance of those EFS file systems. And I think that's probably because many of us have been burned by EFS file systems and their performance and latencies. So I think, yeah, that makes totally sense to work on that. And yeah, so that's why I found this interesting.
Yeah, I really like that because, I mean, that was really the problem with EFS, right? The small file performance. Mm-hmm. So I really like that they kind of optimized there. So that's really cool. And I think that will kind of create new possibilities in the future, or actually today. It's available, right, in all regions, mm-hmm. or is it?
I think they are rolling it out. So they started in US East 1. Okay. I think it's already available there, and they are rolling it out within the next weeks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Andreas, one thing that I checked in the meantime, the elastic mode, the elastic throughput mode is supported in CloudFormation. So you can go and use it also with infrastructure.
That's cool.
Okay, cool. So I can go on, right?
Yes, do that.
All right. So the next one is in preview. So usually we only talk about stuff that you can use here because, I mean, the other stuff is not really, it's not really relevant. But this one actually caught my attention, and I'm very excited about it because I worked on something very similar for a long time. So the announcement is AWS announces Amazon Verified Permissions. And remember, I said this is in preview. You can't use it. You cannot even test it. I mean, you have to sign up for the preview. And usually you are not kind of approved to use it. And even if you use it, it's not for production. So this is just information for the future. What does this new feature or service actually provide us? It provides us authorization for end-user applications. So for our applications, it's kind of IAM policies for us. So for the people, kind of. they invented a new policy language, and unfortunately there's no information or anything how this looks like, or but it's just, okay, the policy language is called, I don't know how to pronounce it, Cedar or something like this. I did a lot of work with OPA, the Open Policy Agent, and the language, the Rego language. I don't know if Rego and this Cedar are kind of similar. We don't know. We have no information. We have no examples, no nothing. But this is interesting. So this is basically a language to express your policies. So you can say, okay, you have read access, you have write access. You can basically say this is allowed or this is denied, similar than IAM policies. But I don't know if it's actually JSON or not, so we have to wait for that. And in your application, you can then call the Amazon Verified Permissions API and ask, okay, this is an incoming request. Is this allowed or denied? And the request needs to be authenticated, and it works with Cognito, it works with other identity providers, so they mentioned that in the FAQs already. It also works with Amazon. Now, Andreas, I need your help. So, what is the new name of SSO?
Identity Center, I think.
Identity Center. IAM, all right. Identity Center. It also works with IAM Identity Center, as far as I understand. So this is interesting. So you can then authorize the users in your Cognito user pool, for example. And this really helps because whenever you create your own application, I mean, yes, authentication is kind of done. And in very, very simple terms, also authorization, if you use Cognito, I mean, you can add groups to users, but this is very limited. I mean, it's not as fine granular as IAM, for example. And if you want to really have fine granular policies, then there basically was no help from AWS in the past. And now it looks like this is going to change. And I hope that this will be released soon because this is really interesting. I actually implemented this based on OPA and Rego policies for a client. And it's really, I mean, you need a front end at the end as well. I mean, you have to set these permissions. It's a lot of work. And basically every company that has an application that runs on the internet for example, that is used by their own employees, so need something like this, because no, you don't want anyone to be able to perform all the actions on your application. So this is really cool, and this is really helping, I think, application developers. So I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, as I said, keep in mind you can't use it at the moment, so it's not yet available. It's just a preview.
Okay, so the last but not least announcement for today that we want to discuss is elastic load balancing capabilities for application availability. And I think this is a little, I found this interesting. So the first thing, I think this announcement, I've seen that last week somewhere already. So what the application load balancer now supports is that you turn off cross-zone load balancing. So you can tell the ALB to forward, to do not do cross-forwarding of requests that are coming in. So basically what that means, when a request arrives in availability zone A, the load balancer will forward it only to targets in availability, so availability zone A, and so on. So this is helpful for latency purposes, for cost purposes, and can also have benefits in a case of a gray failure of the AWS infrastructure. Then the next change in the elastic load balancing capabilities is the load balancer now supports more advanced health checks. So you can now define the health check intervals, specify the HTTP responses that you expect. So actually it seems to have more or less the same functionality than the application load balancer has. The third change, and this is interesting, is that both the ALB and the NLB allow you now to define a minimal healthy targets. So this can be either a number or a percentage, and you define how many healthy targets should there be in an availability zone so that the load balancer forwards requests to those targets. So I think that is interesting because as far as I know, there was just no way to configure that. And I think the idea behind that, and there was a white paper about the way AWS builds for resiliency and failure. I think the idea is also that you use that to deploy your application's availability zone by availability zone. I think this is a little bit where AWS is going to and asking us to. Because the next feature as well, that this is also in preview, so you cannot use it already. I expect if you have access to the preview, which is most often not worth the work, because yeah, but doesn't matter. So the other thing is that that's called zonal shift for ALB and NLB. So what that means is you can now use Route 53. So if you use Route 53 in front of your load balancers, you can basically tell Route 53 to route new requests, basically new DNS name resolving, to only a few zones and not all of the zones that the load balancer supports. So you can, for example, say, I don't want to route any requests to availability zone A anymore. And then Route 53 will not resolve to the IP addresses of the load balancer in this availability zone anymore. So this is interesting. And as I've seen, so this is a feature of Route 53. You configure it there, and it basically integrates with the ALB and the NLB. It's in preview, as I said, but it could be used, for example. So you could, for example, deploy a change to only one of your availability zones, and in case something goes wrong, you can maybe use that approach to shift traffic away from that impaired zone. Or of course also, when because of an AWS outage in a data center on the network or somewhere, you can also manually shift your traffic to the working availability zones. Basically, you get more control over that, which is cool, I would say.
Okay, I see, Andreas. So I don't know, I mean, does any of the deployment tools actually support this? I mean, is any tool able to deploy to a single availability zone? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, actually, I think we are missing a deployment tool for all those blue-green deployments. gradually rolling out things. I think this is really something there's a huge gap in there. So I don't know if there's anything in the market that is not provided by AWS that many people are using, but there's not really a good tool provided by AWS. Expect Code Deploy, which is we discussed that a lot, so we are not really big fans of that service.
All right, Andreas, I think that's it, right? That's all the news items that we selected here for.
Yes, so that's what we select from the past 7 days. So we will follow closely what happens at reInvent. But that's it. So we will be back next week, maybe before that, if we find the time to discuss the announcement this week. Subscribe to our newsletter, our podcast, the YouTube channel to make sure you're not missing upcoming shows. Also, we want to thank our supporters who make this show possible. Consider supporting our work with a recurring or one-time donation as well. You will find details and links in the show notes. Thanks a lot for your attention. Bye.